The ship is now resting exactly where it landed 2 hours ago, and so far there is no sign of life from inside it. Troops have been rushed across the Potomac River from Fort Myer and have thrown a cordon around the ship. They're supported by tanks, artillery, and machine guns. Behind the police lines, there's a huge crowd of curiosity seekers. The Army has taken every precaution to meet any emergency which may develop. Every eye, every weapon is trained on the ship. It's been that way for 2 hours, and the tension is just beginning. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Good. Latu. Barada. Nikto. Latu. Barada. Nikto.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. This week, episode number 47, we sat down with local filmmaker Daniel Duddy, who recently completed a documentary project on one of the hardest working bands in the area, the Wes Williams Band, a documentary called Nobody Cares. It premiered this past week on YouTube. It's about a 28, something like that, minute documentary on Wes, the Wes Williams Band, and just the local music scene in general. There's footage from local venues like Brick and Bones and another couple of spots on the row here, the Holiday Courtyard, as well as some footage from Flagstaff and the Wes Williams Band recent trip down into Southern California. So check it out. Wes Williams Band, Nobody Cares on YouTube. Sit down and listen to Daniel Duddy talk with me about everything from music, film, science fiction, and even some of our local rehab facilities here in Prescott. So sit back and enjoy. Don't forget, we've got our anniversary show coming up. Dealing with storytelling of interesting folks you know. Check us out on milehighshow.com for info on that and how you can participate as a storyteller or as an audience member. And also our upcoming special Star Wars episode where we will be talking all things Star Wars, all things Lucasfilms. We'll be recording that for a later date. It'll probably launch sometime in early December, just before the new Star Wars movie comes out. But we are recording it this coming Sunday, November 15th, at Gabby's Grill in Prescott Valley. So please join us. We'll have some spots open for audience members to sit back, listen in, and maybe participate a little bit. I've got a panel of local Star Wars enthusiasts who are going to convince me why I am wrong in not believing Star Wars is the greatest movie of all time. I'm going to be joined by local photographer, photojournalist Matt Hinshaw of the Daily Courier, local businessman James Haight of Victory Wealth Services, our very own John Rust from KYCA Radio, and a fine sci-fi and adventure writer in his own right, as well as former movie studio insider Frank Abril, who's a Paulden resident, and also Brian Lottie, who is a local techie gamer and Star Wars fan, and they will be educating me, the lone Star Wars holdout. I'm just not a... It's just not my cup of tea. So come by. Listen in as we record. Again, November 15th, Sunday at 5 p.m. at Gabby's Grill in Prescott Valley. Come on and join us. And in the meantime, sit back and listen in with myself and Daniel Duddy, local filmmaker and cameraman, director, and producer of the Wes Williams Band documentary, Nobody Cares. I hope you enjoy it. Give me what you got. Where can folks find out about you and your project?
You can find out about our project at my YouTube account, which is just Daniel Duddy. Just simply type that out on YouTube. You can also find it at Wes Williams Supporter 1, which is Wes Williams' YouTube account. You can also find our music on iTunes. Just simply type in Wes Williams Band, and you'll find our music there.
Now, how long have you been making, you've been messing with film?
Well, it all started about 7 years ago when I was about 11 years old. And
so you're 18 now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I fell in love with film, particularly like science fiction movies and horror films and B movies. I just really had an inclination towards that kind of stuff, and I fell in love with film, and I decided from that point on that I wanted to be a director, and that I wanted to make movies and, you know, video things for the rest of my life, really. And so I started experimenting with videos. Like my parents had a webcam built into their computer and in their laptop, and I would make little videos and like little sketches with that.
Yeah.
Just physically holding the webcam.
You got to do what you got, you know, with the equipment you have at hand.
Yeah, and then they bought me a camcorder when I was about 12, and so then I started messing with that, and I started making more like short film kind of things, with like the stories. Like they started to have like more of a, like a beginning, a middle, and an end. They were,
as opposed to just capturing images, clips. You started working on some kind of format and playing around that way.
Yeah, totally. Which is kind of like how movies started in the first place. You know, just at first, like Thomas Edison and the Lumiere brothers are doing stuff. Just kind of like, hey, look what we can capture. You know, people coming out of a factory or filming a train, and then, you know, sooner or later, you know, in the next decade, you know, started having stories and actors and all that, and characters and all that stuff. And so it gradually evolved into a real passion and hobby. It's always been more of like an occasional hobby, but lately, I mean, I've been doing a lot more like with Wes.
Now, where'd you grow up? I was trying to figure out how old you were looking at your Facebook profile, because a couple of those pictures, you look like you're still in junior high. And then there was one, I don't know, did you just get a driver's license or something?
That was like 3 years ago.
I pulled it up, and I tell my wife, I go, honey, I zoomed in there. I said, okay, 21 and when? How old is this guy? Where was home for you? Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's where I'm from.
Living up here now?
Yes.
Yeah? How'd you hook up with Wes?
Well, I'm at a treatment center, and he works there. And so I'm a client where he works. And I found out he was a musician, and he found out that I made videos, and he saw some of my videos, and he really liked them, and eventually I was given permission to go out and film for him, and from that point on, it's been like about since September, I believe, So from that point on, I've been filming for him and editing for him.
Nice. Do you, strictly on the visual end, are you helping out on any of the audio stuff they're doing? Because they've been in studio doing some new, I'm dating myself here, not album. I guess, is it still an album, CD, digital download music? What do we call it now?
It's not vinyl.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Vinyl's making a surge back.
I mean, it is,
But are you helping out on the audio end too, or are you strictly concentrating on the visual art?
Yeah, it's just really the visual medium of it. I mean, I've never played an instrument in my life.
No.
The only singing I've done is I acted in high school. I was in drama club, and I did a musical.
Were you doing video production in high school as well?
I did. In my freshman year of high school, I took a TV and film production class, and I did not get what I wanted to get out of it, but I mean, it still gave me a good opportunity to experiment and to show people what I could do and to learn a lot from other people.
Find out what you like and what you don't, and kind of playing around with gear and things.
Yeah, and I learned some stuff about editing on Final Cut, and it was I learned a lot.
So. Nice. Now, what was the program like in high school for Scottsdale? Now, I've been in Arizona about 10 years. Before that, San Francisco Bay Area. But when you hear Scottsdale, the first thing you think is money.
Yeah.
What was the program like in school? Did you guys have top of the line stuff for high school? Or,
the classroom had a set of Macintosh computers. But I mean, it wasn't super state of the art, but I mean, it was definitely quality equipment. Yeah.
You work just with digital? Have you ever worked with film?
Yeah, just digital. Yeah, I would love to work with film, but I mean, unfortunately, film is becoming a dying form.
But and same with, you know, photography. Photography is my trade. That's mm-hmm. that's what I've been doing for most of my life. And the same type of thing. I kind of fought it back in the early 90s when mm-hmm. digital started coming into the photography end. And worked in and owned a custom lab, all film. Often mm-hmm. when digital came up, it's like, nah, this isn't going to last. And it took me a few years to warm up to it. And now I still have some darkroom gear, some enlargers and tanks and reels and stuff. And so a bunch of film cameras that I still have, and I keep threatening myself, I'm going to pull those out one day, because there's just something about working in the darkroom and not being able to burn through like you do now. You throw a 8-gig card in the camera, 16-gig card in the
USB
camera,
cord,
and you just boom, boom, boom. You overshoot. I remember the days of shooting sporting events and things for newspapers, and okay, I got 36 exposures here. Got my Tri-X in there. And you really train yourself. For me, anyway, as a still photographer, you would really start to train yourself to selectively shoot and framing and composition. And I find myself having to retrain my head for that now because I got kind of lazy. It's like, I got unlimited I unlimited frames in my bag. You know, what do mm-hmm. I need to be selective for? And I know with motion pictures, with film, the expense is just huge.
Oh, yeah.
And digital has really freed people up to be able to experiment with lighting and mm-hmm. things, locations and angles and focal lengths. Yeah.
Yeah, like, when Steven Spielberg was first getting into making mm-hmm. films, he had a Super 8 camera.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the movie he produced, Super 8, I mean, that's pretty much what it's about. Yeah. Yeah, so it was just very crude, just physically getting the film and having to process it and having to actually cut it and everything. And it was very very tedious and very time consuming. But I mean, I'm actually pretty blessed to be born into an age where, I mean, it's just you push a button and then you plug it in and that's it. And I mean, I do love looking at film, 35 millimeter, 75 millimeter. I mean, I've never worked with it, but just watching movies like that.
Yeah,
it's always been very beautiful.
Yeah, Dan, you want something? Need something to drink? Soda, water, anything?
A cup of coffee.
Cup of coffee.
Yeah, got it. Cream or sugar?
Both, please.
Okay. You're right back. I'm grabbing some more of the Pepsi, right?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah. So
we don't edit through here either. I just let it all run.
Okay.
Waiters, wait staff, people yell at me, throw stuff. I don't care.
So yeah, I mean, but it's just a great way. I mean, you can just get a phone and you can be a filmmaker. You know, it's very much more simple now.
Come from an artistic family, mom and dad in the arts, or
are you
the anomaly?
I mean, you could say that. There's people on my mother's side who are artistic. Like my aunt, she does like stained glass kind of artwork and. Yeah, everybody from my mother's side loves music. You know, we're Irish, so I mean, we love to sing, we love to dance, and So my mom always really liked music and introduced me to music, which I've always had a great appreciation for music, which I mean is one of my favorite art forms.
Never got into the playing of or creating music on your own?
No, but I've always just had a great founded like appreciation for it. Yeah,
I'm like that. I always wish I had the patience and the I guess dedication for music. It never came natural to me. I wanted at a real young age. I wanted to. I would say second grade. This is way back, long, 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 long before you were born.
Yeah.
Probably your folks' age. Second grade was the first time that the school I was in offered music classes to. That was the youngest. Or that was, yeah, that was the first opportunity you had was in second grade. Mm-hmm. And I begged my folks to let me join the music classes at school. And I don't know why. I don't know why I chose it, but I wanted to play saxophone. That's what I wanted to play. Second grade.
All right.
What is that? Seven, I guess. I wanted to play saxophone. No, you can't. I'm begging them every day for weeks, and it got to be the last day that you were able to do it. And my mom finally said, okay, fine, but if you do it, you're going to do it, and you got to dedicate to it. You're not going to flake off because you had to rent the equipment and stuff, so it was going to be a cost.
Yeah.
So they sign the permission slip. I run to school the next day, all out of saxophones, all out of guitars, all out of everything. They had one instrument left. They had one instrument left, and it was a violin. So I went home. She said, no, I don't want it. She goes, no, you begged to play. You're going to play something. So for weeks, I had to play the violin, and I was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Ugh.
And I think because I didn't want to.
Yeah.
So, you know, my practice schedule was horrible. But the there was like no talent. There was no aptitude for it at all. And my dad worked nights, so it was one Saturday, and we had like the first recital where it was going to be the whole school playing.
Oh, man.
And
it
was like in a few days, that coming week.
Yeah.
And it was on a Saturday, so my dad had been, you know, he'd worked through the night, and he's home, and he goes, okay, you got to go practice. I said, Dad, I really don't want to. We've been paying for it. You're going to go practice. So he's laying on the couch, half asleep, doesn't want to hear me and just wants to sleep, but he's doing, you know, the good dad thing and making time for his son. And I played for about 3 minutes, and he sat up. He goes, okay, you don't have to play anymore. He was like, no, you're horrible. He, you know, without saying it in so many words, he said, you're horrible. I did the recital, and I never had to pick up a violin again.
Yeah, luckily, my parents have always been very, my whole family's always been very supportive.
Nice.
Of my aspirations to go into the world of film.
Yeah. What were your? You said your sci-fi was kind of your your genre.
Love that's what, science fiction.
Like what? See, I'm not. My wife here.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-fi nut. If I had my choice between watching which is coming out in just a few weeks here, the latest Star Wars, if I had the choice to go see that on the big screen or go watch, like my old favorites were the old crimes, you know,
Maltese
Falcon.
Oh, I love
the old Bogart.
Oh, yeah.
If I had my choice, Maltese Falcon, The Big Sleep, I'll watch those all day.
Have not.
Yeah. I've got the quick plug for a non-advertiser, Costco. I bought several years ago. They had, you know, they got those compilation DVDs, like 7-8 movies for $10 or $12.
Yeah.
I got the Bogart collection, and love them, absolutely love them. But sci-fi Star Wars came out. I was 10.
1977.
Yeah, I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
I didn't see it until I was well into high school.
Really?
And it came out just after or right around when Jaws came out?
2 years after.
Yeah. Was it 2 years? 75 was Jaws?
Yeah.
That was, loved that.
Oh,
Jaws was great.
Oh, yeah.
Just didn't talk to me. It just wasn't something I was in. So in high school, you know, like everything, all my buddies, oh, you haven't seen it. They were blown away. You haven't seen it, so you got to be kidding.
I said the same thing to people who haven't seen it.
At that point, you know, I think all three of them came. I don't know. When did
Return of the Jedi came out in 83.
Was that the third? I don't even know the number.
So it was 4, 5, and 6, the original trilogy. The first ones to come out. So 4 came out in 77.
77.
Empire Strikes Back came out in 80.
80 was my freshman year of high school.
Return of the Jedi was 83.
That was my junior year.
Yeah.
So they're all out. And I think I was a senior when I saw it. I graduated in 84.
Mm-hmm.
So my buddy, Steve Murphy, I remember who it was. He was blown. He goes, what are you kidding me? You can't. So we go to his house, and he's got him on VHS. We pop one in.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch. He's like, you love it, right? And I'm like, it's all right. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand it. But I love movies, but for some reason, sci-fi just never. Now, since we've been married, my wife, she loves the old Star Trek, Star Wars, everything. So we've got, I've gotten into it more watching it with her, and I appreciate the art form. You know, there's no denying that the for when it was, you know, 1977, it was a groundbreaking film.
Oh yeah,
but. So I appreciate it. I just, it's not, if I had to choose, I'm going to.
Yeah, I mean, I love pretty much every genre of
sounds like it, yeah.
Of cinema there is. But see, science fiction has always just been number one for me from really day one.
Why is that? What do you think?
You know, I really don't know in particular. I've just, from a very young age, way before I got into movies, I had a real kind of proclivity towards that. There were two science fiction films I saw when I was about 5 or 6 that were kind of like the template for like movies I would eventually really leave an indelible impressions on me. And they were Pod People and Destroy All Monsters. And Pod People is this really bad Spanish.
Have you seen those? Pod People and what? Destroy All Monsters?
Destroy All Monsters, yeah.
No?
that's where they probably took that from.
B movie.
Yeah, it's a Spanish B movie. I saw it on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yeah.
I was about 5 years old, and I saw it at Blockbusters. And it's got this alien he looks like a cross between like an elephant, a pig, and a bear. I'm like, I want to watch that, Daddy. And so
like 5, 6, you say?
Yeah, and so I mean, I actually have never seen the film. Like unaltered, I've only seen it on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah,
I just really fell in love with that. And Destroy All Monsters is the 9th film of the Godzilla franchise.
Oh, okay, she's a big Godzilla nerd.
Oh, me too. I love all the Japanese monsters and all that.
Now I do like, and we have it on disc. You'll correct me because in my head it's one way, and a lot of things with me. In my head it's one way, and reality is something else. But I call it the original Godzilla, the one with Raymond Burr in it.
So that that is the Americanized original version.
Okay, now this is what I've heard, and I don't know it to be fact. I don't even know where I heard it. Mm-hmm. It was a mainstream Japanese film.
Yes,
and then to get distribution in the U.S., they just kind of cut Raymond Burr into it?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, so pretty much in 1954, Gojira was released. That's the original. That's the first Godzilla movie. And Gojira is actually Japanese for gorilla and whale.
And the reason, gorilla whale?
The reason that is because there was an executive at Toho Studios, the company that made the Godzilla films. His nickname was Gojira, and he was this big, burly guy, so that's what they just gave him.
Sumo.
The monster, that nickname. And so then a year later, it was either 55 or 56, was coming to America, and so they spliced Raymond Burr, who was later be more famous for Perry Mason, TV show.
And more famous for a lot of things. we'll get into that. This is a family show.
Exactly. Then they spliced him, and he's like traveling there or something.
He's a journalist.
That's right. And he's like reporting everything, like Tokyo.
But it's all done in like voiceover, like flashback kind of things.
Like
because you could tell after I heard that, assuming it was true, then I was like, oh yeah, now I see how. Yeah, because it almost didn't fit in a lot of spots. But it was I like that movie. We've got that one up on the shelf as well. What's a sci-fi? Not even sci-fi. Since you have, it sounds like a real vast interest in different types of films. What's one film like the best movie nobody's ever heard of? Some deep cut that doesn't get the recognition you think it does. Any genre?
God, that's a hard question. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Since we're talking about like sci-fi and everything, there's a movie called The Fly from 1958, starring Vincent Price.
Yeah,
and it more people are familiar with the remake of it, the David Cronenberg remake of Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
So that's a remake of a movie from the '50s, and I. Like when I like look at a list of like the best science fiction films like of all time, it's like it's never on there.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's a very classy and sophisticated movie. It's not cheesy. It's not like cliche or anything. It's very a very intellectual movie. And I mean, you know, audiences today would probably scoff at it, but I mean, I really like it. Yeah,
that's a lot of specifically old sci-fi kind of get a bad rap because they're cheesy and mm-hmm. but in reality, that's like the hardest genre of film to retain, you know, to stay relevant because real technology changes so fast. You know, you can see something from the 40s or 50s that was completely believable and and fascinating at the time. 10 years later, it's like, that's, you know, you can kind of see the cracks in the armor, so to speak, because technology changes so much. Like early space travel movies, you know, in the 50s and before, and then all of a sudden, well, we're actually traveling in space, and it's nothing like that. So it's hard to keep up. So when you find something good in that, something that can really hold your interest and not be cheesy, just be great for the story and for the craft of it, that tells you a lot that it was well done. If it could stand the test of time in sci-fi, you know it was done well.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, actually, I need a spoon. Thank you. Thank you so much. Science fiction. It's a very science fiction films is a very technical genre medium. It's requires a lot of, most of the time it requires a lot of special effects and sets and costumes and everything. But for most people, one of my favorite films is Forbidden Planet with Leslie Nielsen and Anne Francis. It's got
that's early 60s.
Well, 1956. Yes. And actually, a lot of people say it's kind of the forerunner to Star Trek.
Really?
It looks a lot like Star Trek.
I'm almost picturing like the poster for it. I think I know it because most people know now Nielsen for his, his slapstick, airplane,
naked gun
stuff. He was a hardcore dramatic actor in his younger days.
Yeah.
And very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, his Forbidden Planet was his second film that he did. And what was I trying to say? Most people don't see him as like that, but he's very dramatic.
But that's a good one for you.
Oh yeah. I love that movie. And you probably have seen the poster. It's got Robbie the robot, and he's holding a girl.
I think
it says amazing. It's like the tagline of it. Most people would laugh at Robbie the robot. He's just a guy in a suit, and the spaceship is a model. I've always looked at films kind of through the lens of a historian. Nonetheless, most of the time I'm watching a movie, That does not, for me anyway, it doesn't really get in the way of my film-going experience because I just think, Godzilla or Gamera or whatever, it was a guy in a suit because that's all they had. That was the technology they had. Or to give the illusion of, a monster, it was, a stop-motion animation thing done by Ray Harryhausen, King Kong or 20 Million Miles to Earth is another one.
Once we post this, I'm going to have to listen to it and start jotting down all these movies and start scouring through Netflix and Hulu.
I'm glad you're not annoyed. That's what most people
No, yeah. No. Yeah. No. I don't get annoyed. I'm usually on the other end of that. I'm the annoying one in the room usually. So.
Really? Wow.
Could ask her. She'd know.
I'm a huge Tarantino fan as well. He's one of my favorite directors. He's definitely my favorite screenwriter for sure.
He is. His script's incredible.
Oh, man.
I never knew why. I couldn't watch him do an interview. He just would rub me the wrong way, and I couldn't figure it out. And then a buddy of mine pointed it out. He goes, "Hey, he reminds me of," and I'm not gonna say who, but it's a guy we all grew up with. that I didn't like. And I said, that's why. That's why I don't like him. So that's my own prejudice in not getting past just not liking somebody. And, oh, he reminds me of him, so I don't like him right off the bat.
Yeah.
What was it, you know, you mentioned when you were 5-6 years old watching that. What was the movie now? The
Pod People and Destroy All Monsters. Yeah.
Did they, were you too young? This might be a question not relating to that, but what was the first movies that spoke to you and really got you thinking, like, that's what I want to do? Was it that early or was it later? And if it was later, do you remember the movie?
Well, it was, so, I mean, films didn't really speak to me in terms of, like, inspiration to, like, pursue a career in that field until I was 11. But a lot of the movies that did, I still saw at a very young age. Like, you know, I was 7 years old. I saw Creature from the Black Lagoon, and that's my second favorite movie of all time. I love that movie.
Is that McQueen?
No, that's The Blob.
No, no. Oh, The Blob. Okay. Yeah. Who was in Creature from the Black Lagoon? Wasn't there somebody that later became? Was it Michael Landon, maybe? Or
No. I know you're thinking of I Was a Teenage Werewolf. I think so. I think that's the one. No, that is the one, actually. Okay. Yeah. No, Creature from the... It stars Richard Carlson, Julia Adams, Richard Denning.
I think I'm mistaken it for The Blob. That was the McQueen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew he was in one of those early early sci-fis.
Yeah. But, you know, the Day the Earth Stood Still and Forbidden Planet, I mean, it was...
Day the Earth Stood Still, that's the what's the saying? What does the robot say?
Klaatu Barada Nikto,
I like that movie.
I really like that one.
I didn't see it until I, you know, much later in life at her, her being Sandra over there.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing good, thanks. I didn't see it until I, you know, I enjoyed it. I was an adult, you know. Well, you need to get that? You can get it if you want.
All right. I'm just going to turn it off.
Okay.
All right.
No, I don't care. real laid back, man. Relax. But I enjoyed it. And then I thought I would like the remake of it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the remake with Keanu Reeves?
You know, I actually saw that at like the height of my appreciation for it. I was a humongous fan of that picture and
of the original.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's one of, still to this day is one of my all-time favorite films. You know,
that's exactly what
I like Keanu Reeves.
I was waiting for the Indian to come in and start crying. You know, the whole
speech
echo.
Michael,
yeah.
The whole speech Michael Rennie or Klaatu gives at the end about war and everything. Again,
I'm not a big Keanu Reeves fan myself. You know, the best body of work he ever did was Bill and Ted's. Just because I don't even think he realized it was a movie. He thought it was a documentary. I think that's how he really acts. I think that's what he's like off stage, you know. No, he's a fine actor, I'm sure, and a great human being and probably a good father. I don't know. He just for some reason I'm not a big fan.
Yeah.
I remember the first because for me movies were, you know, way back in the olden days when everything was in black and white, including life in general. Movies were either late night and typically not the blockbusters, you know.
Yes,
from the 10 years before, it was what ran, B movies.
At the drive-ins.
Running at late night was what was on TV. And then made-for-TV movies back in the 70s were huge. The movie of the week and things. But, you know, the networks would run certain times of the year, you know, Wizard of Oz and Sound of Music, and you know, they were event type things. So to see movies, you went to the theater, and you walked in, and it was dark, and there were a few of the old movie houses where I grew up, where you walked, you know, like the old movie palaces, you know, those kind of things, instead of the Cinedomes and things. And it was an event going to the movies, and we did pretty regular. My mom, growing up, you know, in the 30s and 40s. That was their entertainment. It was economical for, you know, you can go in for a nickel.
That and the radio. That was it.
Yeah. And so she grew up going to the movies and loved movies. And so we went quite a bit. And it was always, for me, it was almost the pageantry of going to the movie and you had to turn your ticket in and sit down, and it was dark, and you had to be quiet, and then it was just everything larger than life. Mm-hmm. And the first movie that I remember seeing as a kid that wasn't a kid's movie, that wasn't like a Disney, it was an actual adult movie, was Fiddler on the Roof, the musical, you know, of obviously made off of the Broadway play. And to this day, still one of my favorite movies ever. And I think it's more... Hey, thanks. I think it's more of not that it's a great movie. It is a great movie. Great soundtrack and score and everything. Thanks. But I think it's more of a nostalgia kind of thing. I remember going and seeing that on the big screen. Same thing with some of the movies as a kid that we saw at the drive-in. The drive-in was a regular feature for us to go. You know, everybody piled in the back of the station wagon in our pajamas, and we never made it through the whole night. We'd be asleep before, you know, for all I know, my dad was taking us home as soon as we fell asleep, and we never sat through a whole movie. I don't know. But just the fun of going was... You know, so there's a couple of movies that I remember seeing at the drive-in.
It's a bygone era, really. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, yeah, movie. You go to a movie today. I mean, going to a theater. I personally, for me, I think the best way to see a film is on the big screen, sharing it with an audience. It's like a big mass kind of thing going on.
Kill the phone. Nobody.
Exactly. Exactly. But, I mean, movie theaters today are just like boxes.
They get smaller and smaller and smaller.
You know, back in the day, you know, 20s, 30s, you know, golden age of Hollywood, I mean, they were like palaces, movie theaters, and premieres were just a huge deal. And, you know, I mean, they still are. You know, you go to the Chinese theater, you know, Pantages Theater, the Egyptian Theater, and Hollywood Boulevard. I mean, it's still... I mean, it's still very luxurious kind of way of seeing a film.
There was a I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, the East Bay, and there were a few in the East Bay that we would go to, and that were the big old, you know, the velvet curtains and the things like that. But there was one; it's still operational. The Stanford Theater, right outside of Stanford University in Palo Alto.
Oh wow.
And it's set up, you know, the ushers in tuxedos, and they play the old movies. We went, we like I said, we've been out here for a little over 10 years, but 15 or so years ago, we went over there and saw the Maltese Falcon was playing.
All right.
And that was just incredible. I had never seen it on a big screen. Ooh. And it was one of those things where it's always we'd get the calendar and go, oh, we've got to go here, and something would always come up. So I had only gone there a couple of times. And the other day, I was looking online, and there is a theater in Phoenix that still does it, the Orpheum on Adams. So I want to check it out. Are there any others that you know, that the big ones that play the old classic movies on the big screen?
Well, Harkins Theaters, or no, AMC Theaters. That's the one I went to a lot as a kid. They have like I think it's like a throwback Thursday kind of thing.
Oh,
they have
like a special event kind of things?
Yeah, I didn't see any of them, but like I know they had like Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, and The Shining, The Matrix, I think they even had.
I like the old movie houses that were playing the old movies from like the 40s and 50s. That's what I was looking at, and the Orpheum does do that occasionally. I think it's like the same kind of thing. I think it's like... Cinema Sunday or something. They do it like on Sundays because they also do like live shows there. I've never been there, but I was looking through the calendar the other day, and I want to make a point to do that. Well, let's talk. We keep rambling on about movies. Let's talk about the Wes Williams doc that you just put up.
Yeah.
It the name of it again.
Nobody cares.
Where did that come from, or is that a Wes name, or did you name it?
No, I did not name it. It's like it's just about like kind of the band's philosophy. Wes, in particular, he's got a very he's got a very relaxed philosophy on. I mean, just on life in general. I mean, he's very he's just very much a guy who's like go out and do what you love, and who cares what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
Who cares? You know, all the band members have that. They're all their own guys. They're all very distinct, and they're just doing what they love to do, and they could care less what anybody thinks about them.
They're doing it for the love of the music, love of the art, and if you like it, hop on.
Exactly.
Now, there was some footage right here at Brick and Bones, yes, where we are, some up and down the row here, and mm-hmm, some of the walking interview stuff in front of the Elks. But did you also hit the road with them, huh?
Well, actually, I could not go on the road trip. Almost, like the vast majority of the footage that is not on the road in L.A. or in Flagstaff was filmed by me.
Yeah.
Also, some of it was filmed by my friend Ryan Campbell.
I was just going to ask. Go ahead and give a little plug for who helped you, who worked with you on this, because I noticed there was two cameramen listed in the credits, yourself and
Ryan Campbell.
Right. Now, how'd you hook up with Ryan?
He's from the same treatment center,
gotcha,
that I went to. So we're good buddies and everything. And he actually he has a background in music. He went to a community college for music study or something. So I mean and he also did the lights for the shows and everything. He's very good at that. And
for when they're playing,
yeah.
Gotcha.
He's the light man. And so yeah.
When did you start the project?
Well, I mean, from the time, like, collecting the footage, I mean, it was back in September. It's all just stuff I filmed that we filmed.
So it's September 14? Or just, like, this past few, not this past few months?
Well, over the course of these past, a few months, it's been.
Oh, okay, so this past September is when you started it?
Well, that's, like, the first show I recorded for him.
Oh, okay.
And that's and from there on, just the shows like sandwiched in between that one, and is.
Oh, so this was all really recent stuff then? Really recent footage.
Yeah.
Just okay.
Pretty gotcha. Relatively recent. The interviews.
That's some real run and gun filmmaking. I mean, to do it on such a tight schedule like that.
Yeah.
Nice. What were you shooting with? What kind of gear?
I'm a camcorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Sony CX-160.
CX, how large a rig is that? Or is that like a palm recorder kind of thing?
Yeah.
SD cards?
Yeah.
Or Sony, do they use their own?
Well, it is a Sony camcorder. Yeah.
No, but their memory cards, are those, do they still, the Sony cameras used to use their own, the memory stick, which nobody else did except for Sony. It was like a proprietary thing, or are you able to go on regular old SD?
Yeah, actually, they do have like memory cards.
Yeah, because I remember they had Fuji and Sony always used something unique to them, and then everybody else had either like compact flash or SD.
Yeah,
and theirs were always goofy, and I never had a reader for it. And I had a couple of buddies that shot Fuji and Sony, and we always had to get adapters to stick them in the computer. So what was your? Did you try and storyboard it out before you started, or was it a matter of capturing it and then sitting down and creating it from what you already captured?
Well, Wes came up with the idea for like a kind of documentary, kind of film. We were shooting at the courtyard.
The holiday.
Yes.
I know what you're talking about. The outdoor venue where the birdcage used to be before the fire.
Yeah, I think it's called the courtyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he, I was filming that show for him, and he brought up the idea of like having like a kind of documentary type video. And I love documentaries, so I'm like, yeah, I would love to do that. That'd be great. So, over the course of probably the next 2 months, I believe, I was collecting more footage, going to more shows, and got all that footage together and compounded it into one video. And we both edited the video.
Both you and Wes, or you and Ryan?
I know, myself and Wes.
Nice. So he was really involved. I noticed he was listed as a producer as well.
Yes.
So he was pretty integral in making sure his vision got out there.
Oh, absolutely. And I was also pretty. I mean, it was also something I was focused on is, you know, hey, I mean, this is his band.
Yeah.
I mean, this is about the Wes Williams band. It's got to be around his vision, you know.
Yeah.
But he was very lenient. He gave me a lot of creative freedom to express myself and what I could experiment with and what I thought looked good.
Did you find yourselves pretty much on the same page, going in the same direction? Was there any times that it didn't mesh?
No, not really. I mean, we were always on the same boat, really. We were always on the same page. Not really any quarreling about, like, no, it should be this. Because that happens with a lot of creative people. Like, yeah, we should do this, and, you know, now I want to do it like that. And, you know,
well, that and music specifically is so personal. You can take you can take one song and have five different bands do a cover of it, and you're going to come out with, and rightly so, I think, five completely different songs. If you want to hear a carbon copy of it, you know, that's where, you know, we'll just pick up the original CD. Who cares?
Yeah.
When you see somebody put a whole different spin on something, yet you can still have that familiar tune or that familiar feel, but it just goes in a whole different direction. That's the beauty of different performances and different artists. Same thing. So when a musician puts out a piece of music, that art, it's, to me, as an outsider looking in, like I said, I don't know much about music, but just as a fan, that's very personal to them. Whereas some other art forms, photography, for instance, which is what I do, it's a representation. I change it a little bit from angle or focal length or something or lighting, but I'm trying to capture what's there already.
Yeah.
You don't mess with a musician's art form, I found out. I'm covering a lot of bands. It's a dangerous step to be in. Not, I mean, dangerous, but it's so personal to them. So for you to be able to come in and start capturing that and working along with them to be on that same wavelength and that same mentality, that's pretty good. That's a good partnership to be in. No, and pretty unique.
It totally is. I mean, it was definitely a pleasure working with the band. And they were all supportive, and yeah, Wes just he gave me a lot of leeway into allowing me to do things that I wanted to do, and you know, I would ask him, hey, do you like this? And we would like give each other feedback. But yeah, I mean, we had a good time.
Yeah, nice, yeah. Nice. What's on your horizon in your filmmaking career?
Well, I've been writing a lot.
Yeah,
I like to write scripts.
Yeah,
I've been writing. I'm thinking about writing a script about Area 51.
Yeah?
Yeah, but like some kind of science fiction kind of thriller. I've always wanted to, like, see a movie like that, like about Area 51. And yeah, so...
You start putting that vision through your lens soon, or is that still in the planning stages?
I mean, I think it's still in the planning stages, and we'll see, but...
So are you open to, because especially the performance footage of Wes's band really showcases what they're about? Are you up to other bands around here that are looking for somebody to help them out, get some promo stuff out there and get some reels together?
Absolutely, I'd love to.
What's the best way they can reach out to you?
You can reach me at my YouTube channel, which is Daniel Duddy. Just simply type in Daniel Duddy. Yeah. It's D-U-D-D-Y.
And I'll have links to that on our web. Email contact info on there, or is that the preferred method to go through the YouTube channel?
No, you can get on my email at danieldudy@cox.net. You can find me on Facebook as well. On YouTube, just type in Daniel Duddy. And any bands that would like videos, I mean, I'd love to help.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned a couple times, and if you don't want to explore it, that's fine. But you mentioned you're up here in a treatment facility.
Yeah.
Is that anything that you want to talk about? Is that what brought you up to the Prescott area?
It is, yeah.
Yeah? Is it a resident spot? You live there?
Yeah, I do. It's an apartment complex. Yeah.
Gotcha. And it going good with you?
Yeah. Much better than like 8 months ago.
Yeah. Is that an avenue you want to talk about, or...
Sure.
What brought you up here?
So for the past 3 years, I've been battling depression, major depression, body dysmorphic disorder, and suicidal ideation. And I definitely needed professional help. I went to a facility in Wickenburg for about 45 days. And then since early May, I've been at Blueprints, which is the rehab facility I'm in now, and it's in Prescott here, and I've been there since early May, and I have another 3 months there.
Yeah. Are you? Is your plan to stay up here once you're out of Blueprints? You like it up here, or do you want to get back to the Scottsdale area?
I'm not going back to Scottsdale.
No. Is your family still down there, or are they up here with you?
Yes, they're down in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Well, the plan is now. I mean, it's all very vague.
Yeah.
But the plan.
I'm like that till this afternoon. I don't know what I'm doing after today. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not unique in that.
Yeah. And then about 3 months, I'm planning on trying to get my own apartment here and living here for a few months, and then eventually I want to move to L.A.
Yeah.
So
get near the industry town, yep. Huh? Do you? Does your filmmaking and your writing, does that is it therapeutic for you? Does that help you? Do you use it at all in your treatment, or is it just a way to keep focused, or is it related at all?
I mean, it is definitely related. I mean, like a lot of the characters that I've come up with, and a lot of the dialogue or the situations and scripts that I've written. And by the way, I mean, I've never like published anything or written anything professionally. It's just all been just freelance kind of stuff. But I mean, yeah, like a lot of characters they talk about the same things I talk about, or complain about the same things I complain about, or have the same problems that I harbor as well. And I mean, yeah, it is a very, like you said, therapeutic method. I believe, yeah.
Well, good to see you here, and I really enjoyed your doc. Is it? You've got your Area 51 script you're working on. Anything else visual that we can see on there other than just combing through your YouTube channel? Where do you want to steer folks? What, or is there something out there that that's going to hit soon as far as visual arts for you? Or is it all in the planning stages right now?
I mean, everything's in the planning stages. Yeah, I mean, I always have like an idea for something. Yeah, and I mean, I probably will keep making more music videos for Wes.
Nice.
I mean, there's like two other videos. I don't know if one of them's up yet, but one of them is Smile For Me.
Now, are those the like performance ones with the gray backdrop that's going?
Gray backdrop.
Did you work those? There's a couple of him that I just saw. He's playing. I should have done my homework. Anyway, I'll put some links to Wes's stuff. Mm-hmm. Are you doing all his? Pretty much all his video stuff now, or
not all of his stuff, but I mean a lot of his stuff. I've been filming a lot of his shows. I've completely edited two other videos, and there's some other videos that we're going to edit together.
Nice.
And probably just in the future, just recording more shows here at Brick and Bones or like Milagro Arts Center or just any concert he's got. I'll be there and probably I'll weave stuff together.
Do you happen to know what's on his calendar, him and the West William Band calendar in the next couple weeks? Or
unfortunately, I do not right now.
I'll comb through Facebook. I know he posts up there quite a bit.
He's very good at that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Now I did find, I'm almost positive it's yours. You got your Twitter account as well.
Yeah.
You pretty active on there or no?
No.
Yeah, I was going to say there was a couple of not too deep in it. It was like from a year or two ago.
Yeah.
So, All right. We'll look for you on YouTube. We'll steer people that way into your Facebook, and we'll definitely look for more music videos from you. And anything else you want to talk about? I think we covered it.
Yeah.
Go out there and see sci-fi. Oh, let me drop this. You're gonna. Do you already got your tickets for the December 17th, 18th?
18th. Star Wars.
You already got it?
No.
You locked in?
I don't have the tickets now, but I mean...
A couple of buddies of mine that are hardcore sci-fi and Star Wars, and that's when... Like, I guess they started pre-selling them last week, the week before or something, so they all locked in and got it. And I was like, hey, have fun.
Yeah. Star Wars and The Hateful Eight. Those are the two I'm absolutely hell-bent on seeing, yeah.
I have... we've got a podcast scheduled for... We'll probably post it up. The second week, first or second week of December. We're recording it next week out in Prescott Valley. But some of my buddies, do you know John Rust at all?
John Rust.
He's the sports director for KYCA Radio here, and also an author. He's had a couple of sci-fi books published.
Oh, wow!
I had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago. He'll be there. A good buddy of mine, Matt Hinshaw from the Daily Courier, and then a couple other buddies of mine. Actually, one good friend of mine is a retired guy. Frank Abril lives out in Paulden, and he was a set painter for a number of years in Hollywood. That was his, that's what he did for like 30 some years or whatever. both movies and television. Worked for the Disney films for a while, but, you know, painting sets and working with the set designers and stuff. So he's got kind of that inside baseball on mm-hmm. films. All these guys, diehard Star Wars and sci-fi nuts, as I like to call them. they consider themselves experts. I call them nuts.
I consider myself both.
Both. They are going to try and convince me as to why I'm wrong and don't believe that Star Wars is the greatest film family or genre. And so we're going to be recording a podcast about that. And my homework for it is to watch all 6 films. So Matt Henshaw loaned me his stack of Blu-rays.
Yep,
and I haven't cracked them yet. So we'll be getting it. So look for that. We're going to have that Star Wars. I should have, if I had met you beforehand, maybe we could have had you on there. But we got the panel locked in. But they're going to educate me on all things Lucas and all things Star Wars.
That'll be awesome.
Now I'm into shameless plugs for myself. In a few weeks, we're going to be sitting down and recording my anniversary show. This will be my 1-year anniversary coming up in December, and we're going to be doing it in front of a live audience somewhere up and down the row. I haven't quite locked it down yet. I'm this close to finalizing it. But and if you'd like to take part in that, might be something to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Our theme is, and I don't know if you're, this is a shameless piece of thievery. One of my favorite shows to listen to on either podcast or it's an NPR is where I hooked up with it. I'm not sure what they're affiliated with. Is The Moth. Are you familiar with The Moth?
The Moth.
It's themoth.org. They're it's a storyteller show where they take, anybody can submit, and it's like a touring show, and then they put it out as a podcast. True stories. Their thing is true stories without notes. And you get up in front of an audience and tell a story. They give you a theme, and then you tell a story about it. Oh, so wow. I'm shamelessly ripping them off. It's going to be a storyteller show. I'll send you a link to it. But we're taking it an interesting person. That could be interesting in the good way or the bad way. Come up and talk for 5 minutes about somebody who has affected your life. Like I said, could be, we've got a couple who are, one gal's going to be talking about her second grade teacher that really steered her and shaped who she become. And then mm-hmm. there's somebody else who's got a really bad story
yeah.
about this nut job who she was able to take a bad situation and make the best of it. Some are humorous, some are not, the only qualifications we have, there's two. It's got to be true. Mm-hmm. It's got to be interesting. That's it.
True and interesting.
So I'll shoot you a link, and if you want to take part, we're going to have six to eight speakers and somebody doing some intro and outro live music there. A fellow with his guitar leading us in and around and. We'll be. I don't want to say where because he hasn't given me final approval, but it'll be somewhere right here on the row, mm-hmm. where we have access to a spot to record in. So I'll shoot you the link, and if cool. you've got an interesting story you want, and it sounds like you do, you've got probably a few scrolled away in the back of your brain. We'll be having that for our anniversary show, and I've got a couple of shows that I'm going to be recording this week. We're going to space out with. Some great storytellers and some really funny folks with a couple of internationally touring comics and one Phoenix-based comic. We're going to be down recording with those guys next week. So I don't want to spoil it yet, but look for some great stories, some good film coming from Mr. Duddy here, and some great music from the likes of Wes Williams and everybody else who plays up and down the row. So. Thanks for sharing your art with us. Thanks for sitting down and spending some time.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
It'll be nice. And all right. Best wishes to you, man. We look forward to seeing more work from you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That's a solid song, man. Yeah, so let's just walk in.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot what I was doing.
Why the meal I was being suspended? truck or his tongue ring because you hate your job.
Yeah.